Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 25, chapter entitled The Three Modes and Beyond, text number 29. Sattvikam Sukham, Sattvikam Sukham, Atmotam Vishayotam Turajasam Tamasam Moha Danyotam Nirgunam Madhapashrayam. Sattvikam Sukham Atmotam Vishayotam Churajasam Tamasam Moha Danyotam Nirgunam Madhapashrayam. Sattvikam Sukham Atmotam Vishayotam Turajasam Tamasam Moha Danyotam Nirgunam Madhapashrayam. Sattvikam, in the mode of goodness. Sukham, happiness. Atma Utam, generated from the self. Vishaya Utam, generated from sense objects. Tu, but. Rajasam, in the mode of passion. Tamasam, in the mode of ignorance. Moha, from delusion. Dainya, the degradation. Utam, derived. Nirgunam, transcendental. Matapashrayam, within me. Translation and translation by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. And happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But the happiness found within me is transcendental. Translation responsibly. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. And happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But that happiness found within me is transcendental. Omagyan Tibetandasya Kinanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanandu Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama Ram Ram. Chapters 13-17 and 18, Krishna explains a lot about the mode of goodness. This section of the Gita is called Dhyana. So Krishna spends a lot of time developing knowledge of the three modes of nature so that we can understand how we're affected in this material world by the different modes. How we're affected by goodness, how we're affected by passion, how we're affected by the mode of ignorance. So, one must understand one's conditioning in this material world in order to become liberated from that conditioning. If one is too much affected by the mode of ignorance or too much affected by the mode of passion, it is very difficult to progress in spiritual life. So therefore, it is recommended, as Srila Prabhupada explains, that for a devotee has to cultivate Krishna consciousness from the platform of the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is conducive to Krishna consciousness. It is not Krishna consciousness in and of itself, but it is conducive. It helps us attain Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says it is like a springboard to take from one step to the next step. And you need to be in the mode of goodness in order to get to Shuddha-sattva, or pure goodness, or transcendental goodness. To make your consciousness transcendental, you have to live in the mode of goodness. The mode of passion, the mode of ignorance are degrading. They're hindrances, they're stumbling blocks. It's very difficult to make spiritual advancement when you're too much affected by these modes. In the commentaries on the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, one of the acharyas, he points out that when you examine the two modes, the mode of goodness, sattva-guna, and vishuddha-sattva, or pure goodness, when you examine the two of them, you see that they are very similar in nature. So it is conducive to make spiritual advancement by cultivating qualities in the mode of goodness. So Krishna spends most of the final chapters of the Gita, from the 13th chapter to the 18th chapter, he gives a lot of explanation or analysis of the three different modes of nature. What is goodness? What is passion? What is ignorance? And then, in the Bhagavatam expands upon whatever is in the Gita. So Krishna here, speaking to Uddhava, concluding his instructions to Uddhava, he is giving a description of the three modes once again, with even more detail than what was given previously in the Bhagavad Gita. So in this particular verse, it is speaking about happiness. Hands up if you want to be happy. Okay. Everyone. Why is that? Because that is the nature of the soul. Ananda mayo vyasa. It says that the nature of the soul is to experience ananda. Ananda means bliss. Bliss, actually. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, matra spasha stupanteya shitoshna sukha dukkha da. Sukha means material happiness. Dukkha means material misery, distress. So, the bliss that you get in spiritual life is not material happiness. It is spiritual bliss. It is different. Lord Chaitanya says in Shikshastika, he says, Anandam buddhi vardhanam. It is an ever-increasing, ever-expanding ocean of bliss. That is Krishna consciousness. It is not just material happiness, but it is more bliss than the soul can handle. Even it describes that when Radha and Krishna unite in their pastimes, the bliss that Radha and Krishna experience through their union of their pastimes, like dancing together or associating together in whatever way, whichever pastime is taking place, it describes that when the bliss reaches its summit or its pinnacle, it becomes so intense that virtually they just merge into bliss, the two of them. They just merge into bliss. They're just so blissful they just become almost just like merged into bliss. And it says that then at that point it is very difficult for them to understand the difference between each other even. Radha and Krishna, and they're so intense and they're so united in their bliss, they're almost like, it's almost like they merge. And then it says that actually when prema reaches this state of intensity, it actually liquefies. I could give Chaitanya Charitamrita, basically. Yeah. I mean, you can base it all on CC, but there's more. If you go into the writings of the Course of Swami, there's a bit more elaboration on it. There's a book I'm reading at the moment by OBL Kapoor. You're probably familiar. Yeah, he's a Gaudiya. He's a. Yeah. Yeah. So. In his book, he's quoting from different writings of the Goswami. So I'd have to look specifically. But it's yeah, yeah. I think no, everyone understands. I'm not speaking my about philosophy, right? Yeah, yeah. Just in case. But yeah, okay. Thank you for clarifying. But no, my about is in the temple today. Okay. So we're talking about merging, but this merging is not impersonal merging. It is personalistic. So they merge into such a state of bliss where they're feeling such concentrated ecstasy that their prema liquefies. And at that point in time, that prema liquefies into Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. And different places in Braj. You'll see in Vrindavan, there are different lakes which are personifications of the prema of the divine couple, of Radha and Krishna. It is personified. Their bliss is so intense that it begins to liquefy. And at that point, then it is said that Radha Kund is non different from Srimati Radharani. And Shyama Kund is non different from Lord Krishna. Because in their personified bliss, in their liquefied bliss, then it becomes merged into like liquid prema. So therefore it is as worshipable as they that they are themselves. So it is the nature of the soul to seek after this bliss. This is what every jiva is created for. Sometimes, especially in philosophy, but in our Gaudiya philosophy especially, it explains the nature of the soul is to seek after bliss. This is the purpose of our existence. It is to experience bliss in union with Krishna, or in connection with Krishna. So, everyone is looking for it. And in this section, or in this verse of the Bhagavatam, then Krishna is explaining what is the happiness that you derive from each of the modes of nature when you're in contact with the sense objects in this material world. Yeah? So happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Self-satisfaction. Okay. When a person lives in the mode of goodness in this world, in material goodness, they feel self-satisfied. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, jnana and happiness, the sukha, these are qualities of the mode of goodness. One will naturally experience knowledge and one will naturally experience happiness when one is living in the mode of goodness. So then, happiness in the mode of passion is described here as based on sense gratification. People who are very passionate in this material world, they become happy when their senses are satisfied. And when the senses are satisfied, it means the mind is satisfied, because the mind is the enjoyer of the senses. So if the senses are satisfied, then the mind becomes naturally happy and you'll see the people, they look happy. Just like recently we had the grand final here in Melbourne, and then you saw afterwards when all the supporters of the particular team who wins, then they become very happy. They look like they're in some sort of ecstasy. Like that. And why is that? It's because of sense gratification. It's identification that my team is winning, I have conquered, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, like that, Ishwaraham, Ahambogi. Feeling those sentiments in this material world, and one feels happy. But that is in the mode of passion. So mode of passion means that when I get something that I want materially, I feel very happy. But then the reverse is there also. You see that when someone is not experiencing exactly what they wanted in the material world, what happens to them? They become miserable. So you see the materialists, right? So happy and so miserable. And when I get what I want, then I'm so happy. And when I don't have what I want, then I'm so miserable. So it's funny when you see these sporting events. You see the guys who won, the team that won, they're in ecstasy. And the guys who lost, they're in total misery. That's, they're crying. You see in the newspaper, they show pictures, they're crying. You know, and they're just morose, and it takes them 6 months to recover psychologically from the fact that they lost the grand final. Okay? So this is just the mode of passion. Right? What is the difference actually? Right? Just like when I was a kid, I used to play tennis. And when I was playing, then, you know, we all have our idols. You know, when you're young, you have your sports idols. So the two kings of tennis were McEnroe and Borg. Right? So my idol was Borg, and most of the kids, their idol was McEnroe. So what was McEnroe? Completely in the mode of passion. Right? If he lost, right, and it was just, that was it. He was completely devastated. And if he won, he was completely elated. Whereas Borg, he was a little more tinged by the mode of goodness. So if he lost, then he would walk up and he would shake the hand of the guy, and then, you know, have a shower after the match, and then that was it. You know, like, he lost the match, so that was it. It wasn't such a big deal like that. And if he won the match, he wouldn't go into euphoria. I mean, he was happy, he was obviously satisfied, but like that. So that is more mode of goodness. That is what devotees need to cultivate in terms of practicing Krishna consciousness, be equipoised in this material world. Not to be constantly fluctuating according to the modes of nature. Now, I'm extremely happy and now I'm extremely upset. Okay? That is mode of passion. Okay? Too much fluctuation. And actually Jiva Goswami mentions this in his commentary on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. He actually mentions that devotees are emotionally stable. Means their emotions do not fluctuate so much. And devotees are more equipoised. Right? They don't get overly happy and overly distressed like that, materially speaking. Like that. That's one good thing about, there's many good things, but one particular good thing about being born in a body from India. People in India, they have a tendency to be able to tolerate a lot more. Just like you go to India and you see the Guinness Book of World Records in motion. You see like 18 people in the back of a Tata Sumo driving down the road, and somehow everyone's happy, which is kind of strange when you're a Westerner, because you think, you know, if we have more than 3 people in the back seat, you know, our minds start getting disturbed, and they've got 18 people in the back. You know, the kids are in there, everyone's happy, the grandma's there feeding everyone chapatis. Yeah, and everyone's just driving down the road and everyone's happy. Why not? So this is what devotees need to become like as much as possible if they want to advance in their Krishna consciousness. We have to learn to be equipoised. That's why it is said that mode of goodness, which is based upon being equipoised, that is far more conducive for practicing Krishna consciousness. If you're always fluctuating in your emotional state all the time, going from happiness to distress, if you're overly happy when you get sense gratification, if you're overly disturbed when you don't get what you want, you know, materially, then this means you have to look at yourself and understand that you are too much influenced by the mode of passion, and you have to work systematically and conscientiously to become more in the mode of goodness. And then we have tamaguna. So it says here, what is happiness and tamaguna? It is based on delusion and degradation. If I degrade my consciousness, then I am, this is our happiness. There's a degradation of consciousness. And people in Kali Yuga, primarily, are situated in the mode of passion, which leads to ignorance, and their consciousness is becoming more and more degraded. They think degraded activities are the source of happiness. And they think the more degradation that we experience, then the more happy we will be. But we see actually it's the opposite. Happiness is not found like that. Just like very close to here, just down in St Kilda, this is the place where all the prostitution takes place in Melbourne. Not all of it, but it's the like the capital, or it's the most famous place. It's like in Sydney, every city has its place. You know, that's the place for prostitution. So in Sydney we have King's Cross, right? Everyone knows it's famous. Right? In Melbourne we have St Kilda. Right? So just down at Grey Street, back side of St Kilda, not the front side. The front side looks all nice and, you know, Ackland Street and Carlos and everything's all like that. But then you go over the back and Grey Street and all those places, and it all becomes, there's a lot of prostitution. So you'll see that the influence of the modes of nature, people think, materially speaking, they think this is the place where there's the most happiness. I can enjoy myself the most here. And people go there and they think I'll get the most pleasure here. But actually you see that if you go into that area, you don't feel the mode of goodness prevalent. You don't feel it as peaceful. You don't feel it as conducive for practicing meditation. Not even Krishna consciousness, but just it's not a conducive atmosphere for the mode of goodness. So it is based on passion and it leads to ignorance. So you'll see that's where a lot of drug problems are. People are taking a lot of intoxication, a lot of fighting. Prostitution itself is a tamasic activity like that. So you see that there is a degradation in consciousness, which is situated in places where these activities are taking place. So people in the mode of ignorance, they think that that kind of happiness will give me pleasure. If I have that kind of pleasure, if I get that kind of pleasure, I will be the most happy. But it's actually the opposite. That's the nature of the mode of ignorance. It appears to be one thing, but it's actually completely the opposite. It is actually complete darkness, and it will lead to the mind becoming more and more disturbed. You can see when something is good, even in the material world, if something is in goodness, the mind becomes peaceful. If something is in passion or in ignorance, the mind becomes somewhat disturbed or agitated. Just like Krishna says in this section, he says, the forest is in the mode of goodness. So if you go to the forest and you listen to the noises in the forest, what are the noises in the forest? They're all created by God, by Krishna. And what effect does it have on the consciousness? Right? It makes the consciousness peaceful. Right? And then anything which is created by man, basically, you hear the noise which comes out of that. Right? And it has a different effect on the consciousness. Right? Just like even one time in Mayapur, Prabhupada was up in his room and they were having Mangalati downstairs on the ground floor, and during Mangalati they were using the microphone. So the microphone, you know, was being used, and the devotee who was leading Mangalati, the microphone was like hanging down from the roof, and he was, you know, using the microphone to lead Mangalati. But for some reason, which no one can explain except for people who live in India, every time they turn on a microphone and a speaker, they put it on, they put the volume on maximum. Yeah. So everything just becomes, and we still can't work out why that is. Okay. Maybe people who live there, maybe they know why that happens. Okay. Anyone from the West can't work it out. Why everything has to be on maximum all the time. The whole of India is on maximum all the time. A little bit hard to understand. So the devotee was leading Mangalati, and Prabhupada sent a devotee down because he started singing, and because obviously it was on too loud, Prabhupada said, go down and tell them to turn it down. He said, it is demoniac. And that was Mangalati, that was the devotee in the temple singing Samsara Dharam or Indaloka, singing the Guru Vashtakam. But Prabhupada said, it sounds demoniac. Because it's way too loud, and just too mode of passion and leading to ignorance. It disturbs the consciousness. It doesn't help the consciousness. I don't know why they do that in India. They think, you know, we'll make everyone peaceful and happy by playing something religious or spiritual. But then everyone in the whole town turns up to maximum and doesn't have any peaceful effect on the mind. So I don't know why that is, but that's the way they do it. So the modes of nature, the happiness which you find from the different modes will have a different effect. Mode of goodness will give you one effect, mode of ignorance will give you another effect, and mode of passion will give you another effect. But then Krishna says, ultimately, we're not interested in any of these three. Because all three of them are material, and they won't give satisfaction to the soul. So then Krishna says, but that happiness found within me is transcendental. The happiness we get from Krishna consciousness, as Krishna says in the Gita, param drishtva nivartate, he says that this happiness is not it is not of this world. Right? It is transcendental. It is directly related to God communing or exchanging or relating with the soul. And the happiness you get through bhakti, through doing devotional service to Radha and Krishna, to Gaura Nitai, to Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, that happiness that you experience, it is not material, it is spiritual. And it gives the deepest satisfaction. That is not anything to do with this world. So this is the happiness which Krishna is recommending here. He's not recommending that we base our lives on trying to experience anything material in this world, but rather try to get spiritual satisfaction. And spiritual satisfaction can only be experienced on the platform of bhakti. Now, how do we understand how to relate to Krishna? What sort of bhakti will attract Krishna? So Rupa Goswami, he gives an entire book describing in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how to attract Krishna, or how to connect to Krishna. What are the items or the activities that the soul can engage in to attract Krishna? So Rupa Goswami, he says there are 64 principal ways in which we can attract Krishna or please Krishna. 64 principal items of bhakti. Beginning with Guru Padashraya, beginning with taking shelter of the spiritual master, going on and on and on. And then he gives the final five. So all of these activities, they attract Krishna. One of the activities of bhakti is putting on tilak. When a devotee has tilak on, this clay that we place on our face, the gopi chanda, like that, then this clay, it attracts Krishna. It pleases Krishna when he sees the devotees have their tilak on. And it actually pleases Krishna when the tilak is on very nicely. It's an item of bhakti, to pay some attention, to put your tilak on nicely. That actually pleases Krishna. Like that. Just like you'll see even on the highest platform, with the gopis, you'll see that when Radharani, sometimes she'll hear Krishna playing the flute, and she'll rush to prepare herself to go and meet Krishna. Then at that time, Lalita and her friends, but particularly Lalita, who's her senior sakhi, or senior friend, is like her guru. Then Lalita says to her, no, you slow down. Do things nicely. Dress yourself nicely for Krishna. Put your tilak on nicely for Krishna. Do these things nicely for Krishna. Like that. So this is an item of bhakti. Just something as simple we do every day is putting on tilak. But you do it nicely, it is an item of bhakti. It's devotion. Just like sometimes we've said before, Jayaprasaka Swami, he walks up to the devotees and he says, have you got tilak on in 12 places? Because sometimes the devotees get a little like slack, and they might only put the tilak on there because no one else can see the others. So everyone thinks you're pucker. Everyone thinks you've got the 12 on, but actually you might be becoming a little slack. You just put it. So sometimes Maharaj just walks up and he says to the devotees, are you putting tilak on 12 places? And devotees, they answer honestly. Sometimes they say yes, sometimes they say no. Maharaj says, then you should do it properly. This is bhakti for Krishna. You make the body a temple for Krishna. So therefore you put it on all the places nicely. And you meditate while you're doing it. I'm making this a temple for Krishna. My body is a temple. Like that. So there are different items of bhakti. All these are mentioned within the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we have to practice these. Right? And principally, when you go through the list of the first 59 of the 64 items, you see all the different items. Then at the end, Rupa Goswami, he repeats five of them again. And Mahaprabhu says, these five are the most important. Sadhu Sangha, Nam Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Vash, and Srimurti Shradaya Sevan. To worship the deity, to associate with the devotees, to hear the Bhagavatam, to chant the holy name, and to reside in the holy Dharma. These five are the most powerful for giving bhakti. So our whole movement is based upon absorbing our consciousness in these five. To absorb ourselves in these principal items of bhakti. Rupa Goswami says that these items are so powerful that they can produce ecstasy even within a neophyte devotee. That's how powerful any of these items are. Even you're not so advanced yet as a devotee, but just by engaging in these five activities, you can feel bliss from the transcendental platform. You can feel ecstasy from the transcendental platform. That's how powerful they are. Now, one of these 64 items of bhakti is called is to observe the Kartik Vrat. Now, Kartik Vrat, it begins this Saturday on Purnima. So this month is considered the most holy and auspicious of all months of the year, and any service which you do in that month, you get thousands of times more benefit than any other month. So therefore, the devotees, they take vratas or vows to perform different devotional items during that month, special services for Krishna, in order to attract Krishna and to increase their bhakti. It is very powerful, most powerful month. Now, why is it so powerful? Because it is governed by Srimati Radharani. And as we know, if you want to become dear to Krishna, you must first get the attention and the mercy of Srimati Radharani. So therefore, in Kartik month, we are meditating continuously that we are offering this service for the pleasure of Krishna under the blessings of Srimati Radharani. And by her blessings, Krishna can become attracted. Prabhupada mentions in one of his small books, he says that even if a devotee is very foolish, hands up if you come into this category. Okay, most of us come into this category. Right? We are foolish, not qualified. So, despite all of our lack of qualification, if we serve Krishna sincerely and we meditate on trying to please Srimati Radharani through our spiritual master, by serving our spiritual master, getting his blessings, and by his guidance, meditating on giving pleasure to Srimati Radharani, who is the personification of bhakti, or the most perfect devotee of Krishna, the most intense of all devotees of Krishna, the most pure of all devotees of Krishna. Then, if she becomes satisfied, then Prabhupada says, even if we are foolish, even if we are unqualified, then by her blessings, Krishna will accept us. So if you want to be accepted by Krishna, then you have to meditate on pleasing her. Now, one way to please her is, well, everything we do in devotional service pleases her, because she sees that we're dedicating our lives to surrendering to Krishna. But specifically, if you take very seriously this Kartik month, and for that whole month, if you perform extra activities for the satisfaction of Krishna, you will get great blessings and great benefit, and you will advance more rapidly in your Krishna consciousness. So examples of what we can do for that month is, we can just chant one extra round a day. Or, if you're really enthusiastic, you can chant 9 extra rounds a day, which means 25 rounds a day. Or if you're really enthusiastic, you can chant 32 rounds a day. Or if you're very enthusiastic, like some of the devotees who I took to Vrindavan a few years ago, they're chanting 64 rounds every day. Okay. So we can increase our chanting, even if it's only one round a day. Then that will give, that will especially attract Radharani, and especially attract Krishna. Every day it is mentioned that devotees, and this is an instruction that Prabhupada gives in the Kartik month, the devotees should chant the Dhamma Da Ashtika every day. That means every day you have to chant the Dhamma Da Ashtika. Especially it is mentioned by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. The devotees should do this as a Kartik Vrata. Every day it is mentioned that we should offer a candle to Krishna. You'll see in the morning and in the evening we'll have Dhamma Da Ashtika here in the temple, and you have an opportunity to come before the deities and offer a candle. And then there are many, many things which we can do in order to attract Radha and Krishna this month. Another thing which is mentioned is circumambulating the deity. So I remember the number of times, or One time I can remember. I was in Melbourne during Kartik. So every day we would circumambulate the temple 3 times. As part of our like Kartik rut. Go around the temple 3 times. Of course, you have to be careful about doing that. Some devotees started doing it straight after Mangalarti at about 5:15. Started circumambulating and purifying all the neighbours with their japa as they were going around. So please be conscientious. If you do go circumambulate the deities every day, then please don't chat loudly. Maybe don't go around at 5:00 in the morning when all the neighbours are still sleeping. Neighbours were complaining because devotees were circumambulating 3 times. Like that, and waking them all up, purifying them. But so we have to be conscientious of our neighbours because we have good relationships with them. So, now there's so many different things. But the point is, do more to attract Krishna. It's an opportunity in this month to attract Krishna. Krishna will become attractive. There are thousands of times more blessings, and you can make thousands of times more advancement. Every name you chant of Krishna, you've already chanted an extra 1,000 names. That means when you chant 16 rounds during Kartik, that means you've effectively chanted 16,000 rounds. That's how beneficial it is. So increase your bhakti, increase your devotion to Krishna. Now during Kartik there are very special days which come. Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day, Bahulashtami, which is Radharani's, the appearance day of Radhakund. And then the Ekadashis within Kartik are especially powerful. Right? And then we have Prabhupada's disappearance day, Govardhan Puja, Gopashtami. And then the final 5 days of the Kartik Rut, Bhishma Panchak, which are also extremely powerful. Jayapataka Swami, he organizes every year that devotees in the last 5 days in Mayapur, many devotees gather. And for the last 5 days, it is said you can get all the benefit of the entire 4 months of Chaturmasya just in the last 5 days just by performing some tapasya or austerity. So the devotees, Jayapataka Swami and many others, they just eat fruits and roots for the last 5 days in Mayapur. They have a big feast. Everyone only eats fruits and roots, which is actually quite austere if you see how much rice the Bengalis eat normally. It's actually quite austere for them just to eat fruits and roots for the 5 days. But the devotees do this in order to please Krishna. These are special activities that you can perform. Now today is an Ekadashi, but it's a very special Ekadashi, very powerful Ekadashi. It's an Ekadashi just before Kartik. And on this day, in different years on this day, three of our great acharyas disappeared. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. All three of these devotees, they disappeared on this day in different years, and their samadhi is at Radhakund. It is called the Teen Goswami Samadhi. And today at Radhakund they have a big festival to celebrate this particular the disappearance day of these three. And Aindra Prabhu, who disappeared recently from this world, he used to go to Radhakund on this day and he would perform kirtan at the Bhajan Kutir of Raghunath Das Goswami, and then he would sponsor a feast and they would distribute prasadam to all the sadhus there at Radhakund. It was a very powerful, very auspicious day. Because these three acharyas are three of our principal acharyas. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, at the end of every chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then Rupa Raghunatha Pade, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami finishes each chapter by offering obeisances and praying for the mercy of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. So Raghunath Das Goswami is one of our principal acharyas. For 16 years, he was the personal servant of Swarup Damodar in Jagannath Puri, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's final pastimes. He was his personal secretary. So he got to witness Lord Chaitanya's pastimes for the last 16 years before Lord Chaitanya left this world. And then, when Lord Chaitanya did leave this world, and when Swarup Damodar did leave this world, he walked all the way from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan, and because Lord Chaitanya was not there anymore and Swarup Damodar was not there anymore in this world, then he felt that he was going to give up his life. So he was going to jump from the top of Govardhan Hill and give up his life. So when he got to Vrindavan, he went to visit Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, and he told them of his plan. He said that, "I cannot bear the separation anymore of Lord Chaitanya in this world. Therefore, I will give up my life by jumping from the top of Govardhan Hill." And Sanatan Goswami, he said to him that, "I also wanted to give up my life at one point, and I was going to throw myself under the wheels of the Jagannath cart of a Ratha Yatra and give up my life. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed me. He said, 'This body does not belong to you. You cannot use it in this way. You cannot just give it up. It belongs to me. And I have so much service that I want to perform for you.'" So then he instructed Rupa and Sanatan, they instructed Raghunath Das, and they said that, "You've had so much association with Lord Chaitanya. So then you give that association, or you give all of that experience that you've had with Lord Chaitanya, all of those pastimes, all the instructions that you've heard and witnessed, then you share that with the devotees. Right? This is a higher principle of selflessness. Instead of just giving up your life, then you share that with the devotees." So then every day at Radhakund for many years, Raghunath Das Goswami would speak for 2 or 3 hours a day about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And many of these instructions that he gave, this then later became the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami based the Chaitanya Charitamrita on the diaries of Murari Gupta and principally Swarup Damodar. And these diaries were in the hands of Raghunath Das Goswami, and he spoke in them. So the philosophy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita was given by, passed through Raghunath Das Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita at Radhakund. And Prabhupada chose to include this as one of the four main books in ISKCON. So today is very auspicious, and we should do some special bhakti today to try to please these acharyas and pray for their mercy, and pray to them that they will give us their blessings, that we can have a successful kartik, and that we can purify our consciousness, that we become more dear to Radha and Krishna, to Guru and Guru, like that. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we've discussed. Which one? I just thought a little bit, man, about he lived at Radhakund for many years, and he took a vow that every day he would offer, I think it was 1,000 obeisances to the deities and 2,000 obeisances, I think it was, to the Vaishnavas. So he took these very powerful vows. And it was said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that his vows were so powerful they were like lines in stone. His vows were just so fixed. It was like when a line is in stone, it is permanent. So his vows were so powerful that every day he would do these activities. And he performed so many wonderful pastimes at Radhakund. He lived at Radhakund for the remainder of his years in Vrindavan. And he is the Acharya who is he is the Prayojana Acharya within our Sampradaya. So therefore he is prayed to by all the devotees, because he can reveal the higher things in Krishna consciousness. When we're ready to approach the higher things in Krishna consciousness, then he can give us that benediction. So there's many things we can speak. Any other questions? Can we recognize the difference? How can we? How do you know? Then you have to ask yourself, why did you become a Hare Krishna devotee? Why did you become a Hare Krishna? You became a Hare Krishna because there's something that you experience in your heart when you do service to Krishna, when you chant the names of Krishna, that you don't experience before you're a devotee. So if you want to understand what is the difference between material happiness and spiritual happiness, you've already experienced both. We already know the difference because we've experienced both. And they don't feel the same. Because what is material happiness based upon? Atmendriya Priti. Atmendriya Priti means satisfying my senses. So that is calm. Calm means lust. It means selfishness. So that is what the material world is based on. So the happiness we get by being selfish and trying to satisfy my senses, that is calm, that is lust, that is material. Spiritual happiness is based on Krishnendriya Priti. That is the definition of prem. Prem means love. So love means it is selfless. So service to Krishna is meant to be selfless, or ahoitiki. Ahoitiki means without material consideration, without motivation. So for a devotee, it is very different experience, or very different feeling. When we're serving sincerely our spiritual master, when we're serving sincerely the devotees, when we're serving sincerely Tulsi, when we're serving sincerely the deities, when we're doing any service that we're doing sincerely, it is selfless and it is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And the happiness we get is very different. So, is that what you experience? Or?
Because sometimes people that are even singing with their tongue with the amplifier in the car, he was thinking that he was doing something very good, but Prabhupada said, well, no, actually, that's true. So I would say that unless you come to a higher platform, it is sometimes difficult to work out what is material and what is spiritual. Sometimes I've been in the back of the temple watching people jump around in the front of the temple and thinking, I think that's denoted passion. Because the instrument is so loud that it's closing my ears. So the people at the front of the temple are not experiencing this pain in their ears, but they're thinking they're in ecstasy. So I would say that unless you get to a higher platform where the level of discrimination is pretty high, it comes into your mind that there's spiritual material.
Yeah, there's definitely room for confusion in the beginning. But there is also, there's something which is tangible also. Like in the very beginning, we become devotees because there's a difference.
If you finish speaking and you're satisfied, then you know that somebody, you don't have to ask somebody, am I fully?
Yeah, so there is something tangible which brings us to Krishna consciousness from the very beginning. Like that. But as you say, because we're still conditioned souls, there is a mixture between the two happinesses. Just like we can't say that we always eat prasadam just because it's food offered to Krishna. A lot of the time we eat prasadam because we just want to eat a particular type of prasadam. You see something that you like, particularly, and you become very enthusiastic to take that particular item of prasadam. So that's not necessarily spiritual. Okay. Whereas Lord Chaitanya, when he took prasadam, he says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm tasting the saliva of Krishna. I'm tasting the food which has been offered to Krishna. His consciousness is very different. So there is a... Does it make sense then to you? Are you becoming more confused or more clarified? No, I'm asking you. You can... A bit of both, yeah. One thing is that as a young devotee you have to be careful of your mind. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, you can hear it's a conversation Prabhupada's having with a devotee, and the devotee says to Prabhupada, what about the mind? And Prabhupada says, And the devotee said, Prabhupada, what about the mind? And Prabhupada said, what mind? Prabhupada said that if you are chanting Hare Krishna, this has nothing to do with the mind. A lot of the time while we're chanting, we're not listening to the mantra. So that's the mind. So you have to beat your mind a little bit as a young devotee. Don't be too mental. Don't be too mental. My first temple president, Balaram Prabhu, he said to me one time, when I was a very new devotee, he said, don't be too mental. One time I asked him a question, he said, this is not going to be another mental question, is it? Okay, so don't be too mental. Prabhupada said, spiritual life is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. The Krishna conscious movement is actually not that complicated. You know, you go to the kirtans, you dance, you chant for the pleasure of the deities, you take prasadam, you know, for the pleasure of the deities, right, the service of the spiritual master. You read Prabhupada's books, you do your service, and you be happy. Right? Now, I'm pretty happy. That's why I keep doing this. I get up, you know, I battle with my mind, I go through so many difficulties, I have so many material desires. At the end of the day, there's more happiness doing this than doing what the materialists do. So it's tangible. Right? So we should dive into that. Yeah. Just leave your mind on one of the hooks outside there. Okay. Come to the temple and get into Krishna consciousness. Is it okay? Good. And beat your mind. Right? Beat it. Don't let it take control. Yeah. And don't let it... Don't wallow in it or get too involved in it, right? Because it's like a monkey. Right? Monkeys cause a lot of problems. What's the best thing to do with a monkey if they're causing problems? You know, Prabhupada said to Jumuna one time, one of his early disciples in Vrindavan, because the monkeys were causing problems, he said, shoot one of them and then go and hang it up at the front of the temple, right, in the front gate, and that will scare all the others and they won't come. Right? And then she said, Prabhupada, are you serious? He said, no, he's on job. But you do have to use sticks with monkeys. Right? You go to India. Have you been to India before? Okay, so when you go to India, you'll understand about monkeys. They're all over the place. Right? So you have to use a stick. Right? You put the stick up and say, hey. And then he runs off. So you have to do that with your mind. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur says that. He said, hit it with a stick. Hit it with a shoe. Don't delve in the mind too much. There's too much service to do. We can sit around all day in the ashram, oh, my mind, oh, this, oh, that. Oh, she said this to me, and he did that to me, and like that. Or you can just go out and do some service, which is better. Any other points? Then you have to develop knowledge. Knowledge means you have to read Prabhupada's books. Why did Prabhupada spend so much time translating his books? So we read them. So if people in the world read Prabhupada's books, then their ignorance will be destroyed. And they won't follow all these things because of ritual. Just like in India, everyone does everything, not everyone, but many people do everything because of ritual. It's very common in India. They just do it. They don't even know why they're doing it. Same all over the world. So you need knowledge. Right? When you have knowledge, then you understand why you're doing something. Right? So then you give them Prabhupada's books. You explain them why we do what we do. Right? Just like people walk into the temple continuously and they pay their obeisances with their feet towards Prabhupada and they're facing the deities. So many Indian people. Sometimes I'm sitting here chanting japa. And I say, excuse me. You know, when you come to the temple, you have to turn to the side. One time Prabhupada came into Bhaktivedanta Nana and that was happening. And Pujari was offering the aarti. He was the only one in the temple. And the man was offering the obeisances the wrong way. Prabhupada said to the Pujari, while he's on the aarti, he said, you should teach him. This is your service. You should teach him. So you should have to teach all the people who come here what to do properly. And give them Prabhupada's books. And explain to them the process. It takes people don't just follow it. It takes people to explain to them the process.
No, because it's different for Prabhupada. He was sitting there himself, like right there where he's sitting now. He was sitting there in 1975 giving Bhagavatam class, and all the devotees were sitting here, because when Prabhupada gave class he used to sit there. Right? So all the devotees were facing. Prabhupada told all the devotees to sit side on. So you see the video, right? Everyone's sitting like this side. While Prabhupada said, don't put the back to Krishna or to the Guru. So the reason we don't do it in this temple is because Guru is there, Krishna is there. If the Guru is sitting somewhere else in the temple, because some of our temples, like in Vrindavan, then Prabhupada's Vyasasana is on the side, then you may do it differently. Right? So then you have to see. Right? That's why we don't do it in this temple. So we explain to them, just it's not good if you put your feet towards the Guru. So we have to teach them. Any other point? Yes, different methods to work with the mind. The ultimate way to work with the mind is to absorb the mind in Krishna. That's Krishna's final instruction. Manmana, bhava-mapatva, think of it. That's the final way. But all the way along, there's different instructions according to how advanced we are. Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakura says, just hit it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says, hit it. And then all the way up until we become more advanced. But the ultimate way to control the mind is to think of Krishna. If you think of Krishna, if you can get to that level where you can think of Krishna, then the mind becomes automatically peaceful and happy. Just like my mind, we did the astrology retreat on the weekend with Banaswami. Right? So the Banaswami is looking at everyone's chart, so he looked at my chart, and I said to my eyes, I said, this year my mind is giving me more problem than ever in my life, because I'm going through something, it's an inauspicious amount of time. And then Maharaj said, he said, then you should have to worship Krishna, because Krishna is the deity of the mind. Right? If you've got a weak moon in your chart, then you should worship the deity who presides over that particular planet. So who presides over the mind? Krishna. So Maharaj said, worship Krishna. And I said, I'm doing that every day. That's the answer. And that's the only way we get through life's difficulties, ultimately by surrendering to Krishna. Any other questions or comments?